Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
That's Gigi. Oh my goodness.
She's trying to steal our thunder, isn't she? That Gigi.
Yeah, that's who she is, I think. I think that's like basically paving the way for the rest of my life now.
But welcome to Friday.
Yes.
We did it.
We've made it. I don't know what week this is now of like homeschooling and lockdown 3.0, but it's too many weeks for my liking.
Week hell.
Yes.
No. Do you know what? I feel like you and I have been quite positive over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, the homeschooling situation's got a lot easier for me because the little ones can go to preschool. So that's I'm so grateful for that. I think everybody's situation is so different. People are really struggling. Some people are finding it okay because of their setup. Some people are in hell. So I think it's like fair to say, however you are feeling and whatever you're going through, there'll be somebody else feeling it.
Do you know what? You're so right. Absolutely. I mean, I feel like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders with Gigi starting nursery. So having her there like 2 full days is just, oh, wow. It's, I can't even describe how nice it is. Like literally when me and Axel drop her off, we like just go, like as she's gone in, because the volume in the house just decreases. We relax. It's just wonderful.
Would it be fair to say that you definitely have a favorite child? Would it be fair to say that?
I mean I'm sure it will currently swap around, you know, week to week it's different. In fact, maybe I'll start doing that every week on here. Favorite child of the week this week, Axel. Next week might be Gigi. Who knows?
You know how Radio 1 have like track of the week? Well, we could do child of the week.
Yes. Child of the week. Yes, exactly.
My child's been real sick this week, so she's not child of the week. But this week it's Kit. No, yeah. Okay. All right. We'll leave it with us. We'll work on that feature for the podcast. That could be quite entertaining. What's your like Friday going to look like? Are you going to drink? You don't really drink, do you?
No, I don't, because James doesn't. And I just find drinking on my own really boring. Also, I am pretty allergic to wine, which is rubbish. Yes. But I am now on the hunt. A few girls on Instagram actually said that they're exactly the same. And so now we're all on the hunt for an organic rosé. So if anyone can find us an organic rosé and it's decent, I'll be back on it on a Friday night.
I mean, seriously, we're in lockdown. So, you know, people have got a bit of time on their hands. We'll find you an organic rosé, mate.
Please do.
Friday nights have changed for me now, actually, Georgia, because I have to get up at 3:30 on a Saturday morning because I've obviously started Saturday breakfast. So, no, very smugly, I will not be drinking. Although I probably will just start a bit earlier, like 2 p.m.
Yeah,
I mean, I definitely have a glass of wine.
Nice.
It's how I get through the days, mate. It's how I get through the days. This week, obviously, Children's Mental Health Week. And it's a subject that's very close to both of our hearts. We're really aware of our children's mental health. We talk about ours a lot. We obviously looking out for the signs that they're not okay. And I guess this week, it couldn't have sort of weirdly come at a more strange week for me, because very, very sadly, Isla's little dog, Bo, got hit and killed by a car. Little
How
Beau.
Is Isla?
Yeah, she's absolutely devastated. I mean, I kind of wanted to share this on the podcast because it was very weird timing. Suddenly her mental health wasn't in great shape, and it's her first ever experience of grief. And you know, she saw it happen, and you know, it was all very visible to her. So we've been talking a lot about grief this week because she's like, I don't understand why I keep crying all the time. And she says she feels really tired and she's lost her appetite, and it's been a pretty horrible couple of days, to be honest with you. But one of the things, because we recorded this chat a couple of days ago, one of the things that came out of it was our guests basically saying to us, you know what, you need to talk to your kids about these things. And actually, if they want to talk about death and they want to talk about grief, then talk to them about it. So I really took that advice, actually. And I've just been trying to explain to her that it comes in waves and it's going to make you feel like this, and potentially you might feel like this. And if you want to ask me any questions about it, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, no, do you know what that, what Dr. Marta said about grief and just any, you know, any subject, just being honest and putting things in the simplest terms that you possibly can is a really good way to have these conversations with our kids. I think sometimes like we overcomplicate things, don't we, because we want to protect them. But actually, it's probably the worst thing, you know, the worst thing that you can do. And I'm so sorry Isla's having to go through this, because it's really rubbish.
It's really rubbish. And obviously our kids were really close with Beau. And I was like, oh God, what am I going to say to Luna? Luna was amazing. I was like, listen, I explained the situation. I just kept it really, I kept it short, but I didn't gloss over it. And she was like, so Bobo's in doggy heaven. And I was like, yeah, she's gone to doggy heaven. She was like, oh, Grandpa Peter's probably taking her for a walk. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God, that's
my dad. Yeah. And then she just moved on, and she was just really there for Isla, just giving her lots of hugs and stuff. So actually, I think sometimes our kids are a bit more resilient, a bit more understanding than we give them credit for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we touch on this in the chat, but I have been so worried about Axel. I mean, I've spoken to you, haven't I, Zoe? Like, genuinely really, really worried, like to the point where I was thinking maybe I will phone the doctor. Like, I'm not really sure. He seems to have turned a bit of a corner this week. But
I'd say
about 3 weeks, I reckon, he looks exhausted. Like, that's the only, he looks shattered. He's got big dark rings under his eyes. He doesn't have any energy. He is getting really upset about things. He is not that child to get upset about things and moan about things. Like, really, never, ever, ever. He's always the, you know, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, no, you're really not fine. there's been loads of things going on, like with going to the toilet, like he goes for a wee and then he needs another wee and another wee and another wee and another wee. And it's hard. Sorry. It's really hard. Yeah, because it's almost like you don't want to keep telling them that they're anxious and keep telling them that they're worried if they're telling you no I'm not, I'm fine.
You don't want to create an issue.
Yeah, you don't want to create an issue, but then equally it's like, but I really know you're not, like I really 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 know you're not, because you look shattered. And you know, even people that we've seen like out, you know on our walks and stuff who know Axel are like, is he okay, he looks really tired. I'm like, yeah, I know.
We covered all the bases, didn't we? I was like, is he going to bed early enough? And you're like, he's going to bed at 6:00, 6:15.
Yeah,
is he eating well? Yeah, he's eating really well, he's got a great diet, like, you know, you're
yeah
chef.
All of those things. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, he's sleeping 12 hours at night, like he relaxes in the afternoon, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's when you think, yeah, okay, there is something else going on. But you know, Dr. Marta has really helped me, like with this chat, and we're just going to monitor him. And I guess if we need to go and speak to someone, then we will. But I'm hoping getting back to school in a few weeks' time, hopefully, will turn a corner,
kind of sort him out a bit.
We'll
Yeah. And also, I think it's a bit silly for us to think that our kids are not being affected by this. You know, I'm not saying that all children will, but I think definitely there will be cases where our children are definitely off kilter. Like, this is affecting them. They're not seeing their friends. They're not socializing. They're not doing normal day to day things. They miss their sport. You know, it's really, really challenging. And I think things are going to come up. So what we really wanted to do today was to speak to a professional, somebody that knows how children tick. This is her, you know, absolute love, working with families and their kids when it comes to kids' mental health. So, Georgia, who are we talking to today?
Today, we are chatting to clinical psychologist, Dr. Marta.
So joining us on the podcast today, we're very excited about this, is Dr. Marta. Hello, welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me.
Do you know what? Thank you so much for coming on. I think so many of us are so worried about our children at the moment. You know, Zoe and I have both spoken about it at length. Pretty much daily, don't we, Zoe? Like we say, what's going on, especially with our older ones who are four, Axel and Luna, who kind of have a grasp on what is going on, but obviously they don't fully understand it. And I think today we really wanted to talk about children's mental health and how we can support them and what's going on basically inside their heads at the moment and what we can do to help them.
I'm more than happy to talk about all those things. I'm really passionate about kind of working with kids and families. So yeah, that's fine. How old are your little ones?
Yeah, so we've got four. So basically we've got three kids. We've got five between us, but 7, 4 and 2 are mine. And Georgia's got 4 and 18 months.
18 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So we sort of cover all of the areas. But for people that don't know who you are, Marta, and a kind of a little bit about your background, can you just give us a kind of, not, you know, a life history, but just kind of tell us about who you are and what you do. It's a dating show, Marta, so go.
Oh, God. Wow, the pressure. So I'm a clinical psychologist and I've been working with children and families for over 11 years now. I always think that my title sounds really grand, especially with the doctor label attached to it. So just in case, you know, for people listening who don't really know what a clinical psychologist does, I'm not medically trained, but I have done a doctorate, which basically means that I've done research and I can understand and evaluate research critically. And really in simple terms, I work with children and their families and I try and help them overcome the challenges that they might be facing and support them in developing tools and strategies to kind of reach their preferred futures and make their quality life a little bit better. That's what I do, really, in a nutshell.
That sounds pretty impressive, to be honest. I've read a crazy stat this week that said that 1 in 6 children will be suffering, or potentially suffering, from some kind of mental illness at the moment because of this, you know, the situation we're in right now. Have you seen a lot more kids and families coming to you this year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, It's such a big topic, this. So yes, in short, yes, I've seen a lot more and I've heard a lot more stories about children who are struggling right now. I think the reality is that we're living in a global pandemic and so it's normal to be struggling.
Yeah.
I think the thing with that statistic, it sounds so alarming, doesn't it? And I think the media often do that. They kind of blow things kind of out of proportion and not exaggerate it, but they just give you that statistic. And actually the meaning behind it is probably very different from what people are understanding. So mental health is not one thing. It's not good or bad. Mental health is like a wide kind of, you know, multiple factors are involved in our mental health and we all have it. So yes, I'm sure 1 in 6 children are currently struggling with one of those factors that impact on their mental well-being, or overall well-being even. But, you know, those things can be things like sleep, or it could be things like appetite, or it could be things like socializing. Who is not struggling with socializing right now?
Yeah.
or it could be about irritability. So, you know, just at small things being more irritable than usual, or tears kind of showing up more frequently. Those are all signs that actually their mental health maybe being affected. But those are all very, very normal symptoms of this very, very abnormal situation that we're living in. So I think, you know, if it's only 1 out of 6 children, I think that's a pretty amazing statistic, because I would say, I don't think I've met a single adult, me included, who hasn't been affected in some way. And also mental health varies from day to day, moment to moment. You know, it's not something that just stays stable. It's a bit like our mood, which is also obviously a sign of our mental health. So children might wake up feeling like quite happy, and then after a couple of hours on a screen trying to do schoolwork, they start to feel really frustrated. And I would say, yeah, that's pretty normal, because that's not normal situation to be in, to be doing your schoolwork in your kitchen or in your lounge. That's your home. So yeah, I think that statistic can sound alarming, but when we understand it, when you can deconstruct it a bit, it's a little bit less scary, I guess. Yeah. I don't know how you feel about what I've said. You might think that still sounds terrifying.
No, I agree.
This is something that I really worry about. And I think because of how I think, you know, I've been struggling with my mental health during this pandemic, I'm like, well, if I'm struggling with it, then of course the kids are going to be experiencing, like you said, some sort of mental health. And it's very hard to, I guess, try and reason or try and explain to a four-year-old or a two-year-old what's going on in the world. And so it can kind of build up and you notice behavioral things that are changing or, you know, for example, Luna, she started to, you know, not be able to get to the loo in time. She never did that before. Kit has started biting. And then you're like, well, is this just developmental stuff that they probably would have gone through anyway? Or is this related to the fact that we're on total lockdown and there's a global pandemic going on? It's a bit of a minefield at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think unpicking those two things is really tricky. It's probably a little bit of both. So children do kind of regress, if you like. I don't really like that word, but I would say this, you know, when they're learning how to become potty trained, it's not kind of, you know, it doesn't stay perfect all the time. Children have accidents, but it's more likely that they're having little accidents now. And whether that's because of worry or whether that's because they're distracted and their routine is so different to what it normally is, that actually that routine of going to the toilet at school at certain times is not there. So, you know, your little one is kind of struggling to get to the toilet now. It could be, many of those factors. It could be a little bit of everything. Same with the biting. Like, kids go through phases of needing more kind of sensory comfort, I would call it, like soothing. Some children are more sensory than others. Some of them really need that kind of outlet. Others, you know, won't need it as much. So again, to me, the biting is a form of soothing. So I would say, yeah, your children are probably just experiencing stress. Mm-hmm. And the stress for them will be a change of routine. So that might include having you at home all the time is a source of stress.
For who? For me? Yes.
For both of you. Absolutely. Yeah, all of you is a source of stress. So, you know, usually they'd be used to us at home with them at home rather than mummy's working, go away.
Yeah. And it's hard to navigate that, isn't it? It's hard to say to them, you know, what mummy's trying to get her work done. Can you please, go away? It's like you don't really want to send your child away. But at the same time, this is not a normal situation. Like, how are we trying to juggle this and manage this? It's literally like, I feel like we're going to end up talking about our own mental health here, but it's just a very tricky situation for everybody involved, isn't it?
Incredibly challenging. It's an impossible task. It's not humanly possible to work and parent and be a teacher at the same time. It's just not possible. We're not supposed to be doing it.
Yeah.
That's why children go to school.
I think it was on your Instagram the other day about the signs of anxiety in children, and it really struck a chord with me. My son Axel is 4 and he doesn't really complain about much. He kind of just keeps it all to himself, and I notice things like Zoe mentioned about the toilet. Like, he'll go to the toilet and then need another wee and another wee and another wee and another wee, and then he gets really frustrated and he's like, I've just got too many wees. Or he'll be very irritable, like he can't relax. And for me, that screams that he's anxious.
Yeah.
How do you help your child when I know the reasons why he's anxious. You know, he was at preschool last year and then never ever went back there because it closed. Yeah. Just got taken away from him, that routine. Yeah. And then now he started primary school in September, and then that's been taken away from him. And he's probably worried that he won't get a chance to go back because that's what happened last time. How do you help them through this kind of thing?
Yeah. So the best way to help your child is to offer them a space to kind of talk and express their worries or their concerns or, you know, just how they're feeling. So that would be kind of the first thing. I think because of your little one's ages, I would say children don't just express feeling through words, like you've both noticed. They're expressing it through their behavior or their bodies, and that's very normal. That's how like anxiety shows up in little ones. So try and think about using play and creative tools like drawing, looking at books. So if you look at books and look at like worried faces, you know, like don't necessarily read the book, but have a look for pictures and images and ask your child, oh, look, you know, for example, the Gruffalo's child at the end, she looks really scared with the shadow. You could use that picture and kind of say, what do you think that Gruffalo's child's feeling there? Well, she's scared. What is she scared of? And then you have like, and then you say, what about you? Do you ever feel like this? What makes you feel like this? So that opens up the conversation and it helps children kind of, when they're not feeling the fear or the anxiety, it allows them to kind of talk about it and think about it. So that would be one thing. Just offer the space to listen. When children feel heard and understood, the feeling starts to shrink. So that would be my first kind of tip. My second tip would be about helping them kind of practically problem solve. So once you know what the issues are, like if you think it is about school, then your child might benefit from you talking to them about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
When they do go back to school, you're not going to be able to make like promises about it won't close again, for example.
Yeah.
So it's about making short-term plans, like while it's open, this is what's going to happen, being very concrete. So rather than putting a judgment on it, you can say something about, do you remember when you were at the school and you really liked, I don't know, playing on the swings? You could go and play on the swings again. So remind them of the things that they enjoyed.
Yeah,
that were possible, and tell them it's going to be possible again. So we don't know when, but it will happen.
Yeah,
we don't know for how long, but while it's happening, you just kind of embrace it and help them kind of, you know, feel that positivity and that hope. But the best thing you can do is name the feeling when you see it. So especially that running to the toilet, you can name that if you think it's anxiety.
Yeah.
You can say that, I think you just went to the toilet 5 minutes ago, darling. I think maybe you're feeling a little bit worried. And yeah, that's okay, but maybe we don't need to go to the toilet. So I'm here for you. Let's just sit together. Shall we sit together for a minute and think about what's happening to your body? Where do you feel that need for a wee? It's here. It's in my tummy. Okay, what's your tummy doing? What's it saying? But you know he's not going to wet himself because he's been to the toilet.
Yeah.
So what you're doing there is offering space to talk about the feeling rather than taking him to the toilet and kind of reinforcing that behavior of like that kind of butterfly feeling in their tummies that they often kids get. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it really does.
Total sense.
Yeah, it's hard as well, like to not get frustrated, like especially for instance if we're just all about to leave the house for, you know, for a walk, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you know what that takes, like trying to get kids stuff and dress and out of the house. it's a long old process. And then suddenly he's gone to the toilet and he's got, you know, and he's crying and he wants to go out, but he needs a wee. And I find that really hard not to be like, oh my goodness, you just don't need a wee. Yeah. You don't need a wee. It's difficult. It's really difficult.
It's really difficult. I think in those moments, like it's actually harder for us, I think, you know, definitely. And it's that stress of, you know, like, we need to get out. So put on your coat, let's get out.
Yeah.
I think in that moment, it's about, for us, taking a deep breath as parents, watching what's happening for our children. I always say, take a pause before you say, come on, put on your coat. Just wait for a moment. Watch. I need a wee. Breathe. And then remember, okay, this is anxiety talking to me.
Yeah.
This is not my son or my child. This is anxiety. And what does anxiety need right now? Okay, anxiety needs my calm. And anxiety needs me to just sit with it for a minute. So even if you're in a rush, because being in a rush does not necessarily make things happen faster, you know, it just kind of creates tension for all of you.
And
so if you're able to breathe and go, okay, anxiety needs my calm. And then you can just say something like I just kind of said, like, okay, I think that's anxiety. It's around again. I think it's playing tricks on your tummy. It's making you think you need the toilet again. I'm not sure that you do, but that's okay. I believe you. Let's try and put our shoes on our coat first. And if you still need to go to the toilet after that, I'll take you.
Yeah.
So what you do is you slow it down. And then often by the time they've got their shoes and their coat, then you could say, how are you feeling? So I wouldn't necessarily say, do you need the toilet? I would just say, how are we feeling? And your child's probably like, yeah, okay. And they go, right, let's go.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's great advice, Marta, isn't it? It's brilliant advice. It's all these little tips and tricks that we need to have you on speed dial for. So what we've done is asked our followers to send in their questions, and we wanted to kind of put them to you. Obviously, it being Children's Mental Health Week, we thought you would be the perfect person to answer these. And I'm going to kick things off with a question which actually I can kind of relate to as well. Is it normal for a four-year-old to be talking about death a lot and worrying about people dying? And my two have started shouting, "We're all going to die. We're all going to die." And I'm like, "We're not going to die. Stop saying that. We're in the supermarket on aisle 22. So where have they got that from? And is it normal?
So my answer, short answer, would be, yep, it's pretty normal, given the current context that we live in. So lots of little children have heard the word death or dying, whether that be on the radio, on the TV, because adults are talking about it, because they've associated what's happening now with people dying. Mm. Four-year-olds, I think the really important thing to know is that four-year-olds do not really understand what the word death is. It's just a word, but it doesn't like have the same meaning as it does to us adults, and it won't have that meaning until they're about 7 or 8, and that's to do with their brain development. So things that children, for example, at this age really don't understand is that death is permanent. Because of their brain, they've got this thing called magical thinking. So death is a little bit magical. It's a little bit, you know, like magic things happen. Like if you go to heaven or somebody goes to heaven, they often will want to go with them or want to go and visit them. That's normal, because to them, heaven is like Mallorca. It's just a place. They literally don't understand. So they will ask, you know, like that, "We're all going to die." I think at some point I always say if your child's talking about death, and children are at the moment because it's been talked about, right?
So
you can't protect your child from those things. But I always say to parents, talk about it. Keep it simple and keep it honest. So you don't have to lie, make up a story, or you even say things like, don't say that. Just say, "Oh, it sounds like you're really interested about death. Do you want to know more?" "Yes, tell me about death, mommy." "Okay, I'll tell you something about death." So then, because I think one of the things that happens is when we hear that word death, and there are other words as well, as adults, we think that's scary. That's a scary topic. It's deep. I'm frightened. I don't want to touch it. Yeah. But actually, that gives a message to our children, which is, I'm not allowed to talk about this, but I don't know why. So I'm just going to talk about it more because I don't understand. And what your child is doing, what children are doing when they talk about death a lot without having a conversation, is they're trying to create meaning. So they're trying to say, well, I don't know what death is, so I don't know why I'm not supposed to talk about it, so I just will. But if you sit with them and explain very simply what death is, like I said, four-year-olds will not really understand it. So I would very much ask that question, what do you want to know about death? What is it, mommy? Death is a thing that happens to everybody. It's a part of life. Anything that is alive in the world dies. Like you can use the example of flowers. Look, flowers die. Look, they're blooming and then they're gone. That's an example, for example. It doesn't have to be a person example.
Bumblebees. We put them back to nature in the garden. We take them outside when we find them in the house, or like flies or whatever. And we're like, let's take it back to nature. And then we dump them in the garden and we give them a burial. We sing a song or something.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah. My husband thinks it's like, what, singing another song for a fly? I'm like, we're trying to make it lighthearted. Get involved.
We've been singing all day in my house. We have loads of flies. We'll be right back after the short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, welcome back. Back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
Next question. There's two questions, but basically a lot of people have written in to ask how their own mental health may affect their child's mental health.
In terms of like genetically or in terms of their behaviour or...
Yeah, lots of questions around like how much do you think a parent's mental health can affect the child? Someone said they've got a history of an eating disorder. Yeah. How can they protect, you know, their little ones from that?
So I think, this is obviously a concern for parents who have a label, is what I'm going to call it, a mental health label attached to them. And I'm somebody who likes to kind of dispel labels and kind of really think with parents and children, like, what does it actually mean to you to have this label and live with it? So if we just think about something like an eating disorder, my thoughts would be as a parent that the best thing you can do is to try and teach your child how to have a healthy relationship with food. Mm. But of course, that's going to start with you. Because if eating or food has always been like a tricky relationship for you, then you need to work on that. And the best thing you can do for children is model what, you know, good eating, healthy eating is. Same with like just any mental health label. Can you show your child how you cope with things? How, you know, parents who think, oh no, I've got an anxiety label attached to me, what does that mean for my child? I often think, this is an excellent opportunity. To me, they're all opportunities for you to role model what it's like when something big like anxiety or eating or whatever it is comes into your life and how you manage it. So don't hide it. Actually talk about it. So if anxiety is around, for example, just say, oh, I can notice anxiety is around at the moment. Okay, I'm really struggling today, but that's okay because I know what helps me. But say it out loud. Let your child hear it, because they're learning from everything that we do more than our words. They learn through our actions. Mm. So if they hear you say, I'm anxious or whatever it is, they will then say, okay, so anxiety is normal. My mummy gets anxiety. I get anxiety. So maybe it's okay to talk about it. And I learned the other day that when my mum feels like that, she goes for a walk. So then if your child feels that feeling, they might say, can we go for a walk? Because I'm feeling anxiety. Just because they know it worked for you, they're going to try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So think about, I always think that's normal to have that concern with mental health, but it's more important what you show your child, because that's what they learn.
Is it ever okay to cry in front of our children? And how much should we be protecting them from what's going on in the world, in our lives, in our fears, all that sort of stuff?
It's an excellent question. So my simple answer is yes, cry in front of your child. That doesn't mean sob in front of your child. They're two different things. Tears, absolutely. It's really important. I would actually say, particularly dads. I know that it's called Made by Mamas, but you know, I'm hoping dads may listen as well.
They do.
You know, dads,
they
do. Show your tears. Show your tears. It's so important. They're just a sign of being human. They're not a sign of something wrong with you or, you know, something like shameful. When you're able to show your tears and your child sees your humanness, it really is quite connecting, and it's freeing for kids. They're like, oh, it's not a sign of weakness. Oh, I'm not weird when I cry. I'm okay. Yep. The way that you do it is by when you show your tears to explain. So again, use your words alongside it. So something like, I'm feeling really sad right now. I really miss Nanny and family too. But it's okay. You know, maybe we should look at some photos and that will make me feel better. Do you want to come with and sit with me and look at some photos? So it's about kind of sharing, this is how I feel and this is what I'm going to do about it. And that really helps your child. You can also share like your reassurance about, you know, I'm okay. I'm crying, but I'm okay. So my daughter's seen me cry many times. And I often say to her, it's okay. Crying makes me feel a little bit better, because it often does. I feel a little bit better when I release the tears. And if you feel like, oh, it's going to become overwhelming, you can say, I just need a moment, darling. And then you go and you have a moment. You're allowed your privacy. Boundaries are really healthy for your child. So make sure that you're meeting your needs as well. But it's totally okay for your child to see that. I hope that makes sense.
It's good to get the reassurance. There's another question here from Louise. She says, my 10-year-old can't sleep, totally anxious, doesn't know why, gets in such a state and nothing helps.
Oh, I would say that's really normal for right now. Again, we're in this completely abnormal situation and sleep has been really affected for everybody. I would say actually adults are really struggling with sleep as well. Also, this makes me think about like what normal sleep is. I think we often have this myth in society that once children sleep through the night, they stay asleep all night, every night, and things are easy. But actually, how real is that for us as adults? Like, I really struggled to sleep two nights ago. No reason I can think of. I just couldn't fall asleep. So I didn't fall asleep till like 1 or 2 in the morning and I was exhausted the next day. But our bodies sometimes are saying, yeah, we can't fall asleep. And there's a few factors at the moment that are also making this worse. Screen time has gone up massively. Mm-hmm. And we know blue light affects sleep, and especially in little ones who are more sensitive to that. We're not moving as much, like definitely not moving as much as we would normally. So again, like physical exercise and movement, that really helps with sleep. We have more worries and anxieties and kind of thoughts bouncing around that usually would go away through either distraction in every day, you know, when we're at work or we like see a friend or we bump into somebody or we have an impromptu drink or whatever. And with our children, it's the same. When they go to school and they talk to their friends or they're playing football or whatever they're doing, that just takes some of those worries away. But at the moment, they're just kind of brewing with us. So it's normal for the 10-year-old. Things to try might be think about what time they're going to bed. They might actually need a later bedtime. I know that sounds really strange, but going to bed too soon and just lying in bed awake is really not helpful or, you know, conducive to sleep. It's much better to go to bed a little bit later. I would make sure children and adults have fresh air first thing in the morning. So if you don't have time for a walk, open your windows, have your cup of tea outside, on your balcony, on your front step, get your kids to join you. I'm not even joking. It's really important to get that fresh air on your face, hitting your face for a few minutes. And in the evening, about an hour before bedtime, you want to dim all the lights. You want to make sure there are no screens around for a good hour before sleep and have like a good bedtime routine, whatever that looks for you, because people have different things that they like to do. So with a 10-year-old, it might be bath, you know, pajama story. And then just think about maybe moving bedtime a bit, like half an hour. But sometimes asking your child at that point, why can't you fall asleep, is really difficult because they don't have a why.
They just
have a kind of brain that's a little bit overwired at the moment.
Yeah. What do you think about weighted blankets?
Yeah,
I just think so much about them. Yeah.
Some kids love them. Other kids don't. Again, it's, you know, individual kind of preference, I think. They can feel really nice. They just feel like a cuddle.
Yeah.
But some people don't like that, do they?
I heard some horror stories about those, George. About them saying they're super dangerous and things like that. There's so many conflicting reports on the internet about whether they're good or not.
Well, I think with little ones, I probably wouldn't put a weighted blanket on a little one. So anything like below the age of 10, I probably would not.
Right, yeah.
Because they will restrict, they do restrict movement a little bit. You don't want them to end up underneath.
No.
Yeah.
God. Oh, send shivers. Here's a question. Should we be worried about the long-term effects of social distancing on young kids?
I mean, what a huge topic, right? Where do I start? Should we be worried? I think it's normal and probably sensible to worry.
Yeah.
I think little ones, so below the age of around 8, as long as they have, and this is like a big as long as they have like good connections and relationships at home and they've got a nice kind of settled routine as much as possible. So routine for little ones is things like sleep, eat, play in like predictable times of the day. They will be okay. Most of those children, as long as their homes are safe and secure, and they will be okay. The problem is most parents are working from home. So they're not able to offer their child the kind of comfort and connection that they probably need. So that's one kind of risk factor at the moment for tiny ones. The biggest risk and the biggest kind of, for me, the thing I worry about the most are the teenagers. So the tweens and the teens, this is completely abnormal and goes against their developmental needs of individuation, which basically means separating from their parents, developing an identity in terms of friendship, sexuality, their gender, all those kind of things. They're stuck at home with their parents. And we don't currently have any evidence-based, like scientific knowledge about what will happen, because this is like unprecedented situation. So we don't know. But they are the group of children, young people, that I worry about the most. I worry about the impact this will have on their development, our social and emotional development. I wonder whether it's just going to mean that they are, they're not going to progress on the same developmental track as they would had there not been a global pandemic. And we need to think about that and, you know, put things in place to support them and offer them, you know, soothing and comfort and well-being and all that kind of stuff. If I'm really honest, the thing that's really bothering me at the moment, and I don't even know if I should say it.
But... No, you should say it. Come on, be honest. This is what this chat's all about.
Controversial is school. I have a real issue with the fact that children are doing school on screens as they are.
Yeah.
I think it's actually detrimental to their mental health, much more than the social distancing.
Yeah.
This feels very different from last summer because it was summer. I think having this pressure on children and parents about homeschooling is really not beneficial to children and young people. I think obviously young people and children need to learn, but we need to be mindful that, you know, the ability for our brains to grow and develop within like the context of stress that we're all under is really limited. So the expectation that children can have a school day at home is impossible. And I just think, I just don't think it's supportive of anybody's mental health, let alone children and young people. I think it would be better if children and young people were only doing 2 or 3 lessons a day, controversial, but that's what I'm going to say, and that they were much more focused in particular areas, but the rest of the time they were kind of interacting with their parents or each other or nature or playing. Playing is so important and beneficial to children and young people.
Yeah.
And just releasing that pressure of those kind of educational standards, which I just think are currently really unrealistic.
Yeah.
And I feel for the teachers because it's not teachers' faults.
No, God, they're doing an amazing
really
job.
Feeling this. Yeah. Exactly. And they're really feeling it too. They're really kind of, you know, they've been pressured to do this and they're doing a fantastic, amazing job. But I think many teachers feel the same, that actually, that, you know, that it's not a classroom.
Yeah.
It's not homeschooling. Homeschooling is usually a choice some parents make.
Yeah, and it's not online either, is it, usually?
No, it's not. So it's really tricky. So yes, I think it's normal to be worried and concerned. I think that's realistic.
Christine wrote in about managing anxiety around video social interactions, example Zoom. So how can you manage that, especially with young children? Like Axel, for instance, has a meetup with his class once a week on Zoom, and they're, you know, it's for them to kind of, I guess, socialize. But he's a completely different child when he's in front of that screen with all those faces. He's shy, he doesn't want to talk, whereas in a normal situation, you know, like if they're in the playground, he wouldn't be like that. How, I mean, do you just take the pressure off and just think, well, they don't like it, they don't interact in that way, I'm not going to do it, and shut them off? Or do you kind of encourage them that this is the only way that they're going to get to socialize at the moment?
So again, I'm going to be controversial. I'm going to say, as the parents, this is what I say to the parents I work with, you're the expert in your child. You know what works for your child. If this doesn't work, then I would totally support you in saying, we're not going to do this. This distresses my child. They don't need to be distressed.
Yeah.
This isn't social contact for my boy or my girl, whoever it is. I'm not going to do this. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
I work for children, and most, to be honest, most 4 or 5 year olds, they can't do the screen stuff. It just does not work. It's not engaging enough. It's not, you know, it's just not right within their developmental skills or capacity. But instead, it might be about meeting a little friend at the park every day for like 20 minutes, which you're allowed to do with another parent and say, I'm not going to do this, but instead we're going to rotate. You know, like, I think as parents, you do have a voice and you can use it to advocate for your children, particularly right now. Yeah. I think for those parents who feel like, because every situation is unique. So some parents will say, no, this is good for my child. I want them to socialize with the screen. Think about what works for your child. Does it work better if their video is not on? Does it work better if you put the screen on the TV? So it's a little bit more distance and it looks a bit more like it's a cartoon, you know, like something that they'd watch, but they're not a part of. Does it work better if they just listen in rather than interact? Like, some children don't want to talk to people on a screen. So I think, how do you deal with that anxiety? I would say you listen to it. You listen to it and you consider what's right for your child and you adapt as much as you can, or you change it. Like you just said, you know, if it doesn't work for your child, then I would say, yeah, close the screen. It's okay. It's not going to harm your child. And you speak to the teachers about it. You kind of say, this doesn't work. Do you have any ideas of what else might work for my boy? Because this doesn't work for him.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on and on asking so many questions, and we have so many more. But just to wrap up, what message would you kind of send to parents right now who are, you know, worrying about the impact that the situation we're in is going to have on their children, and, you know, where can they go for some advice and help?
So I would say to parents, this is, you know, things are hard because they are hard, not because you're doing anything wrong. You're not. There is probably very little wrong with your child. They're just responding to this very unnatural situation, and their bodies and brains are doing the right things, which is kind of send out a signal of alarm and kind of say, help, something's not right with me. The best thing you can do is connect with your child, offer them a space to talk, give them some soothing and comfort with your, like, loving touch, connection. Play is excellent for little ones and teens, and it's good for us too as adults. And if you are concerned, then 100% always just seek medical advice or professional advice from a qualified healthcare professional. You can go to your GP or you can call 111. And I always say to parents, you don't have to think, oh, it's only a small question. It is only a little concern. It's not a big deal. If you're concerned about it, it's a big deal. Yeah. Listen to it. Listen to your gut. And if all you get out of it is reassurance, that's an excellent outcome and that's a good thing. But there might be just a few things, tweaks, support that you and your children can get. And I would say this is also goes for you as a parent. If you feel like you're on edge all the time, you're feeling really angry, you're really struggling to cope, talk about it with somebody. Make sure you look after your needs and your mental health as well, because that is the greatest and the biggest factor in being able to kind of contain and support your child's well-being.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Martha. That's been amazing. I mean,
yeah, you've lifted a huge weight off my shoulders anyway. So, yeah,
and mine.
Can't thank you enough. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Will you come back on again and then we can maybe talk about our mental health, please? Not specifically mine and George's, but everybody's.
Such a joy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Again, another guest that I feel like we need on speed dial.
Yeah, absolutely. She's going in my phone book. She doesn't know it yet, but she'll be receiving many a WhatsApp from me.
I thought it was brilliant how we got to kind of throw all of those questions at her. And I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question, but we had so many that were sent in. But hopefully that's kind of, you know, set some of your minds at rest and just kind of helped to figure things out with our kids, because it is a minefield. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, we're going to do products today around, you know, helping our kids with their mental health and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. And I know that, you know, buying something is not necessarily going to fix it, but these are a few things that we kind of use to help our kids.
Yeah. So I'm going to kick things off with an amazing series of books by an author called Esther Marshall. She's wonderful. She's written a series of books called Sophie Says I Can. And it's basically all about building up your children's confidence, letting them know that they can share their emotions and their feelings, talk to somebody about it if they're feeling worried or concerned about anything, if they want to share anything. And it just like beautiful illustrations, really lovely storylines. And I actually read it to Kit and Luna the other night and they loved it.
Yeah, I think as well, it just opens up conversations, doesn't it? You know, like, you really can do anything if you put your mind to it. You don't need to be worried about, you know, I think that for me anyway, with Axel, and you'll probably find this with Luna's age as well, I think reading stories is the best way to get them to talk about like feelings and emotions. This is another, I guess, tool for nighttime. I mentioned the Kids Calm app before, making Axel a bit cross. But after Frankie Bridge spoke about it, I have given it another go, and I've also tried Headspace as well. And I think once they get used to having these sort of sleep stories on and these kind of like kids meditation chats, they do get into it and they do relax. So sometimes I will, just an hour before bed, like pop one on, have it in the background while Axel's like sitting on the sofa where he maybe would have been watching TV, and I'll just pop a story on. So it is definitely something to try, but also to persevere with. Like, if at first they don't like it, it doesn't mean it's not going to work. I just keep trying.
Yeah, love that. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, keep going with it and hopefully you're going to get a good result. And I also loved talking, you know, you just mentioned the telly there, about Dr. Marta kind of saying, you know, all screens, all telly, like an hour off before. And we've been doing that for like about a year, and it is actually helping massively with them going to sleep at night. It really does chill them out. You don't realise, like, I'm wired. I was on my phone last night, night before, and I think we were chatting. It was me and you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You were like, go to bed.
And then I went straight to sleep and I was completely wired from the blue light. Like, really bad.
I actually ordered some of those blue light glasses.
Oh my God,
I bought some for Axel as well, just because of, you know, sitting on screens doing like these Zoom lessons all day, he's wired, so I have actually got them. So, you know, maybe that's another thing that's nice. Be useful.
Love that. The next product is Aromatherapy Play-Doh. Now, this is supposed to be phenomenal stuff. You've got it, haven't you, G? And it's a really nice kind of calmer and relaxer for the kids. So whilst they're therapeutic, whilst they're, you know, making their Play-Doh, rolling things up, they get a really nice aromatherapy smell off the Play-Doh and they don't know it's happening, really. So it's quite a nice trick just to chill them out a little bit more.
Yeah, it's like a little stress ball for kids. And last up, I mean, we've spoken about worry dolls before, and this is, I guess, a similar concept. This is from My First Years, and it's a worry monster. So you can get it personalised, as you know, you can with a lot of the stuff from My First Years. And it's a little toy, a little cuddly monster, and it's got a zip on its belly, so you can write down their worries and pop them in. And it's almost like, once you've popped them in, it's like the worry monster's taking those worries away from you.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, there's loads of good stuff out there that can help. And I know, as I said before, I know it might not fix all of their issues, but it will go some way in helping, for sure.
Absolutely. Listen, thank you so much for sending in all of your questions this week. We have loved this chat. As always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast if you do have time. And as Georgia always says, keep sending the pictures in.
Yeah, please. We love seeing how you're listening. And do keep your suggestions coming. We're constantly using your suggestions as well for guests and experts. So please DM us at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Hardman. And we'll see you on Tuesday.
See you then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.